Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. I'm your host, Sam Dosa. Well, good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, wherever you are. This is your host, Sam Dosa, with Chai with Sam Dosa. This podcast is running since June 2020. It's almost, oh my God, end of the year of 2020. People must have been taking a big sigh on this. Well, 2020 is going away now, and we are going to be entering in 2021. Wow, hooray. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I wish you and hope you every best possibility for the new year in 2021. This podcast has been on the go from 2020 June, and I had amazing guests who have actually shared their wisdom, their up and down journeys with me, because it's a heart-centered conversation, which means you are sharing what you'd like to share. And today is another exceptional guest with me, all the way from United States of America. His name is Terry Tucker, and we will go further down in his journey. I'm just going to give you a snapshot of what and where he has been graduated and what has been doing and what he's going through right now and how he's going through a successful look aftering himself and also being motivator to a lot of extraordinary people. What he has sharing with us today is 10 principles to leading your uncommon and extraordinary life. So let me give you a snapshot. What I say about him is that he was employed in a marketing department in a headquarter of Wendy's International, Dublin, Ohio. And then he went to Riverside Methodist Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and then got married, became a police officer in, wow, again, as in another city, which is quite, I can't pronounce it, but it's also in Ohio again, which I think Terry will pronounce it for me later on. And then Texas. Well, I've been to Texas. It's a beautiful another city in Houston. Wow. So he has done a lot of things. Let's hear from my guest, Terry Tucker. Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa, Terry.
Thank you, Sam. I'm excited to be here and talk with you today.
Amazing, amazing. So Terry, tell us a little bit about who Terry is and what is his purpose in this transient world.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, a fairly big city in the Midwest in the United States.
Windy City.
Yeah, the Windy City, exactly. And I'm the oldest of three boys. You can't tell this from me sitting down, but when I stand up, I'm 6'8". So I played basketball in college. I have a brother who's 6'7", another brother who's 6'6", and my dad was 6'5". So if you sat behind our family in church growing up, there wasn't a prayer's chance you were going to see anything that was going on there. But as I mentioned, athletics, specifically basketball, was an important part in my life growing up. And I attended college at the Citadel, which is a military college in Charleston, South Carolina, in the southern part of the United States, on a basketball scholarship, despite having three knee surgeries in high school. After college, I moved home to find a job. This was a time long before the internet was available. And I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. And I was all set to make my mark on the world with my newly obtained business administration degree. Fortunately, I was able to find that first job, as you mentioned, with Wendy's International, the hamburger chain. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, I ended up living with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mother care for my grandmother and my father, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. Mm-hmm. My wife and I have been married for 27 years, and our only child, a daughter, is a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy. Wow. And is a lieutenant in the newly formed Space Force here in the United States. So that's a little bit about my background before 2012, when literally my courage, my faith, and certainly my resolve were put to the test when I was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, a rare form of melanoma. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Would you like me to talk a little bit more about the cancer and?
Go for it. Go for it. I was trying to. So let sink in, because it's quite a thing when you are, your life is going so graciously going upwards, and then you find out something so steep. So please share with us. Please share with us.
Sure. So you kind of mentioned this a little bit. You know, as an adult, I've kind of felt like I've reinvented myself frequently over my professional career. As I mentioned, that first job out of college was in the marketing department of Wendy's. And from there, I transitioned to hospital administration in Columbus, Ohio. And then after my wife and I got married and moved to California, I became a customer service manager for an academic publishing company in Santa Barbara. And that's also where I became a reserve police officer with the city of Santa Barbara. And then subsequently, when our daughter was born and we moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, I became a full-time police officer, and I worked in the areas of patrol and undercover narcotics. And I was also a hostage negotiator on the Cincinnati Police Department SWAT team. Following another relocation, as you mentioned, to Houston, Texas, I started my own school security consulting business, and I also coached girls' high school basketball in Houston. But as I mentioned, my greatest challenge, certainly the greatest challenge of my life, occurred in early 2012 when I was diagnosed with this rare form of melanoma that presented on the bottom of my left foot. By the time the cancer was detected, it had metastasized or spread to a lymph node in my groin. And because my disease was so rare, there's only about 6,500 people in the United States that are diagnosed with my form of cancer every year, it's recommended that I be treated at the world-renowned MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. And it literally is world-renowned. People come from all over the planet to be treated for their different types of cancer at MD Anderson. I had two surgeries to eliminate the tumor and all the lymph nodes in my groin. And then I had a skin graft to close the wound where the cancer had been removed on my foot. And after I healed, I was put on a weekly injection of a drug called interferon to help keep the disease from coming back. Now, interferon for me was a horrible, nasty, debilitating drug. And I took those weekly injections for 4 years and 7 months before the medication became so toxic to my body that I ended up in the intensive care unit with a fever of 108 degrees, which usually is not compatible with being alive. When I was on the interferon for all those years, it gave me severe flu-like symptoms for 2 to 3 days every week after each injection. And since I've been off of it, you know, I really kind of sit back and think about that. I mean, I can't imagine when I started it, having flu-like symptoms or having the flu every week for almost 5 years. I mean, that just seems, when the doctor suggested it, I looked at her like, you gotta be crazy. I mean, that just doesn't seem like something that somebody could do, but you know, you do it, you have to do it. When I was on the injections, you know, I lost 50 pounds during my therapy. I used to joke that I was so skinny that I could go hang gliding on a Dorito, you know, and that, yes. And then I was just, you know, whatever, we've all had the flu. You know, I was constantly nauseous. I was tired. I was chilled. My ability to taste food even diminished. And my body continually ached. And this misery went on for over 1,660 days. Oh, and one thing I've learned during all my pain and suffering is that you have two choices. You can either succumb to the debilitating discomfort and misery, or you can learn to embrace it and use it to make you a stronger and better human being. Now, I chose the latter, but I want your listeners to understand that there were days that I felt so poorly and I was in so much agony that I literally prayed to die. I just wanted out of this life. Each day was a struggle to use my mind to override the apathy and the distress that my body was feeling. Now, I realized that pain and discomfort can beat you to your knees, and it can keep you there if you let it. But I also came to appreciate that I could use my pain and suffering to make me a stronger and more determined individual. but I was no better at dealing with pain and discomfort than the next person. So I don't want your listeners to think that, you know, I was some kind of Superman. I wasn't. I was just like everybody else out there. But every day I found a way to survive with the knowledge that I would need to do it all again the following morning. Unfortunately, my cancer experience hasn't ended with me conquering my disease. This, unfortunately, isn't a feel-good kind of story. And the melanoma that had plagued me for over 6 years returned in 2017, and eventually my only treatment option was the amputation of my left foot, which occurred in January of 2018. The cancer returned again in 2019, requiring additional surgeries. And then earlier this year, an undiagnosed tumor in my ankle grew large enough that it fractured my tibia or my shin bone, resulting in the amputation of my leg above the knee. And then further testing found that the cancer had spread to both of my lungs, and I'm currently undergoing treatment for the tumors that I have in my lungs. But I'll be here this time next year. But victim to this malignancy, I vowed to continue my fight, and I knew the only way that cancer could win is if I gave up, or I gave into the disease, or it killed me.
Wow. Wow, Terry. You know, the journey which you are on is what you're going through. I think a lot of people will take a leap of, you know, second chance and say, you know, I can't take this severe sort of pain and ache, and I can't take it. I have to have not wanted to be here. I just wanted to take my life. But you have shown there is always light end of the tunnel. Yeah, we have. I think let me share you a story because we all go through with certain uncertainty in our life. I just wanted to share this with the story which you share. I would like to share a story about my mother. My mother was suffering from depression, and. We were not aware, and within the society, our society, which is an Asian society, we look at depression as a stigma, as something. It's nothing, but people just make it up, you know. But it was severe depression. My mom was going through the severe depression, and my dad was was diabetic, and on his journey he lost his leg as well, or that one of left foot he lost as well because of his gangrene and happened because they cut the a small part of the part, and then they say, oh, it's growing and it's growing, and they have to cut the entire left foot. So he was had a prosthetic limb which he was using it, but he was up and down with his journey as well. And in 2000 I have to invite my mother to come and see us because my daughter was going to born in 2000. And my father was sick at that time, but my father put a lot of enthusiasm in my mother and said, yes, go and help your son. He is looking for you as this and that. So she came to UK, and she helped with my daughter's delivery and helping us with other things. And then she went back in end of October. And then I had a call from my family saying, your dad is suffering and he might not be alive after a couple of weeks. So suddenly I have to leave the UK and reach the destination, which was Pakistan. I went to see my father. My father was just like, you know, you left in 1996, you came back in 2000. I have kept all your mail. I have kept all your those things. And I just... what I'm going to do with those things. But he's just reminding me that I kept all those sort of things for you, you know? And you know, our relation, you might not aware of it, within our culture, father relationship with the father, mother is completely different. We might attach to our mother more than our father, because our father is always a breadwinner in a household, and his responsibility is that he will bring food, he will attend with all the responsibilities of what require for children to have clothing, schools, fees, and other things, and then that's what his responsibility is. And other than that, there was no emotional connection with your father. my father relationship was, we hugged only on the occasions of certain occasions, and that's how we used to connect with each other. But we, as we were growing up, we never had this proper connection with each other. And when he was on his dying bed, he was saying those things. I was crying out loud because I was saying, you know, I missed those days when I was supposed to connect it and had to have one-to-one with him. But fortunately, unfortunately, he did not survive that journey. And in 2000, end of November, he passed away. And so my father passed away and in 2000. And then we went back to our normality of saying, okay, goodbye. And time will heal this whole situation. My mother has taken a different toll on it because she was now alone with my, we are five brothers. So I am the only one living in the UK and they were all living in Pakistan. So even my elder brothers are married and moved out. My other two brothers were living together and mom was living with that, with her, with them. But it was the, what do you call it, a dynamic of the house where she find it very lonely. She was not doing anything. She was even interacting with all of my uncle and aunt and everything. But still, because the support where she was always there to support my father was not there. And she finding it very difficult to feel that way. And she was finding in difficulty more and more. And then she decided to make the decision that I want the younger brothers to get married quickly. Not realizing that, you know, you need to find the girl, right? Girls and this and that. I want them to get married. So they just jump on the bandwagon, found the girl and got married. And she's, oh, my responsibility is complete now. You got married. And but my one of the brothers is still not married. So she decided that this is my responsibility. I got you guys married. My responsibility is finished now. So if I will die, I do not have any sort of burden on me. And we went once. So 2000, my father passed away. And then later on, we went with our own life, with our own journey, because I had a baby. We were looking after and we were taking care of X, Y, Z things. In 2004, we got a good news that my wife, ex-wife, was expecting twins. And then I thought, you know what, better would I would call my mother again to help me with this whole responsibility because I'm working full-time. My ex is going to be sitting at home looking after children. And so I said, oh, mom, we got a great news. I'm having twins. And she was very excited that we are having twins. But she had this journey of underlying depression, which we did not capture. Even in my family, there were two professionals, health professionals. My ex-wife was a nurse, and my younger brother's wife was also a nurse. Even though they did not pick up, because they were general nursing, they would not understand the up and down of those things. So they did not actually recognize what happened. And what my mother did actually, she sent the people from the house go away on their own journey regards to go to your in-laws house. I need to do a few things in the house. And she was calculating a lot of things which we did not capture. What she did actually, she broke her ankle, deliberately broke her ankle. So damaged the ankle so she damaged the ankle so badly that even though it was hurting, if you have a sort of a twisted ankle, you will be in agony, correct? And she broke her ankle and she was not in agony. And she's just saying, oh, I was doing something in the kitchen and I fell down and I broke my ankle. And then she was on the plaster for almost 5 to 6 months. And my twins were arriving in February in 2004. So I was given ample time for my mother to recover from that. And I was calling her, I was preparing her, and she was saying, yeah, I'm coming, X, Y, Z. And now what she was saying that, yeah, I'm coming, but she was not, we were not picking up the real notion of what she was feeling at that time. And then suddenly I got a call, not from my brothers, from my uncle in America, saying that your mom did a suicide. And I was shocked. I said, I spoke to my mother on the emails on Friday, and you're saying my mother did a suicide. And I was completely shocked. And you think of suicide as a person can overdose, a person can hang himself or herself. But she actually light herself with the kerosene oil in the house where she was living. And my mother, she woke up in the morning, she dressed up, really look nice looking lady, and then everybody says, so where are you going, mom? Where are you going? Oh, no, I'm not going anywhere. I just wanted to get ready, you know. I want to take a shower. I want to get ready and everything. And suddenly my brother said, Sam, we just felt something is smells very dirty or very unsettled. And we thought, where is coming from? And we rushed to the room and we found my mother on a burning body. And we just wrapped her around our hand. And my youngest brother, he says, I was holding her in the blanket, trying to comfort her. I could not believe that this is what happened. I was in London, I was in the UK, and they were there. Two weeks prior to my twins were arrived, she did a suicide in Pakistan. And it was a big shock to the entire family that we were not anticipating this, that this is going to happen, and this is the sort of things. And you know, we all go through with a journey in our life, whatever happens to us. I think if we count blessings, because I can feel the journey you are going through and what you are experiencing right now. I can say, okay, Terry, I can completely understand your feelings, because what my mom did, I can resonate what is going you are going through. It's nothing that I can't feel it. I feel it that that journey of going up and down, when you can't resist that pain in your body and you're just telling your mind, focus somewhere else. Don't focus it here because it's very painful. And that's called the tenacity of within yourself, because the God is present within you and is guiding you through and saying, Terry, I know you are going through with this journey of pain and unsettledness, but remember one thing. This is you are the chosen one, because I want you to go through so you can tell that the people around you that God is present everywhere. And it's not because that you are suffering. It's not suffering. It's I love you so much. I love you so much. And my mom was on the stretcher. She was 95% burned. And she woke up and she held the hand of the doctor and said, listen, nobody has burned me. This is my own responsibility, because I wanted to do a suicide. Because I don't want you to create a police case over here saying that you burn your mother because of the property or XYZ thing. No. And the doctor was so shocked. And he said, Mama, how can you talk when you are 95% burned and your body must be burning? Your each and every cell will be burning. But she just wanted to tell that person, so there will be no case against my brothers. And then she would not survive because she was 95% burned and she died. And it took me almost, because once my mom did this, what she did, she was not going through with her own uncertainty with her life. So she did what she wanted to do. It took me almost 8 years to come to terms with this, because it was difficult. And as my twins arrived, I just dive into that, looking after and going through with my own journey of my children and everything. And when I became a counselor, I wrote a story about, a poem about my dad as well, because I could not resist. I could not say it when he was alive, that I love you very much, because we were so, naive is not the right word. We were so unrealistic in our own, we are very unrealistic about our own journey. So we're not remembering that people who are present around us are more important. So anybody right now in my life I care about, I always try to get in touch with them and wish them all the success in their life. And that's how I feel that this is supposed to be for all of us to go through, that if you have a father, if you have a mother, cherish them. Because if they will go, then you will realize, oh my God. And then every year you're going to put on the Facebook saying, oh, my dad passed away on that day, and everybody's sending you messages. I said to people, when I'm alive, send me all the flowers, all the gifts now. Don't send me when I die, because I'm not going to enjoy it. I want to enjoy it right now. And that's what it's about, you know. And I see you as a saint, which is going through your journey of your own soul. And you are standing so firm and guiding so many people. This is not end of the life, you know. Everybody has to receive something to come near to God. And this is your journey. You are coming near to God, and you're saying, you know, accepting, and as you say, embracing it. Not everybody can embrace it. Somebody says, oh, you're going through with COVID-19, embrace it. I'm saying, well, why should I embrace it? I should have an injection. I should get a vaccination done so quickly. Yeah. But embracing this is dynamically beautiful. So how are you going through with your journey? Sorry, I interjected and shared my journey with you.
No, not at all. I you know, it, listening to you relate your experience about your mom, when I was a negotiator with the police department, a lot of what I did was interact with people, you know, who, if you were talking to me, you were probably having the worst day of your life. You were contemplating taking your life, or you were holding somebody you cared about hostage or something like that. So it was some pretty intense stuff that we did. And, you know, there were times where we were not successful, where we could not talk somebody out, and they chose to commit suicide. They chose to end their life. And while I felt sympathy for them, I never lost any sleep over it, because I didn't contribute to the underlying problem or problems that they had that got them to that point. But I did the best that I could to try to get them past that point. And sometimes we were successful at that, and sometimes we weren't. But like I said, you know, it's hard for us to come on to a scene, I'm sure you as a counselor, you know, to try to, you know, I don't want to call it fix, but to try to help somebody with a problem that, one, you didn't have any involvement in creating, and two, this problem very well could have been going on for, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, a lifetime. And you were expected to come in at a period of time, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it was, and solve it, or at least get the person over the hump, so to speak, and make things better. As you know, sometimes that's just not realistic. You know, you do the best that you can. And I had great training, and we had psychologists that worked with us, and we trained every month and all that stuff. But sometimes we just weren't successful. And like I said, I didn't lose any sleep over that. And I hope your audience doesn't think that I was callous because of that. It was just that I did the best that I could. And it wasn't my decision to take that person's life. It was their decision. So yeah, I understand what you're saying. And it was your mom's decision to, you know, to commit suicide for whatever reason. And you're right. You wish as a family, somebody would have seen that. What were the clues, or what were the things that we missed? And you feel bad about that. But bottom line is, that was her choice. It wasn't something your family decided that was going to happen. So sure. I appreciate you sharing that.
Pleasure. Because I just wanted to, because we are all connected with a thin line of humanity, or I would call it energy. We are all connected with energy, because what energy? While you are sitting in USA, I'm sitting in the UK. We are still talking on this thin line of energy, and we can send messages on that line as well. But this, again, everybody is to be ready to receive it. If you are not ready to receive it, it's not going to come to you. It will go somewhere else. And that's what I said to a lot of people. When people ask for prayers, when people say, can you pray for me? You should say, yes, I will pray for you. Yeah, because prayers is something, is so good thing that people pray, whoever they believe. They just pray and pray. And there are a lot of experiments has been done, a lot of things has been done, that collective prayers, people who do collective prayers for somebody, they start to get healed. People have come out from recovery from their worst cancers or worst scenarios that they have gone through. And because the people are doing collective prayers, whether in the church, in the synagogue, in the mosque, in the temple, wherever they sit and they do a collective prayer for somebody, and the message they receive in their body started to heal them very quickly. And those miracles has happened. We have seen it myself. I've seen myself. And this is the journey. And now when you talk about those 10 principles, let's get into those that 10 principles, because I think without those 10 principles might be the one principle which create a repulsion on somebody who will start to take an action. So please share your 10 principles with me.
Sure. I guess maybe I should set this up a little bit. So this book was really a was born out of two conversations I had. As I mentioned, I was a basketball coach in high school, and I had one of the players on my team. She and her boyfriend moved to Colorado, where I live now. And my wife and I had dinner with them a couple times. And I remember sending her a text message. And I said, I'm really excited that you're living here and I get to watch you find and live your purpose. And she kind of came back to me with, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is? And I told her, I said, I have no idea what your purpose is. That's what life is all about. That's why we were all put here, to find and live our purpose. I remember Mark Twain, who is an author here in the United States, said, he had one of the greatest quotes I ever heard. He said, the two most important days of our lives are the day we're born and the day we figure out why. And, you know, I kind of thought about that and I shared that quote with her and I said, I don't know what your purpose is. That's what your life is all about. Your life is that journey to find that purpose. And then once you find it, to live it. And I reminded her, you know, there are some people who they know right out of the gate what they're going to be. I'm going to be a doctor, or I'm going to follow in my father's business, or my mother was a nurse, so I'm going to be a nurse, or whatever that was. And then there are people like me, you know, who I think I know what I want to do, but I'm not sure. And then there are people who just give up. They quit. You know, they look, and it's too much of a trouble. So I'm not going to look anymore. I'm just going to settle for what I have. And I feel sorry for those people, because those people, those are common and ordinary people. And common and ordinary people never do anything with their life. It's the uncommon and the extraordinary person who does something. So that was one conversation. And then I had a basketball player who connected with me on LinkedIn, who wanted to know what I thought were the things that he needed to not only be successful in his business, but to be successful in life. So I started thinking about those two conversations and I started writing down just thoughts, ideas, and things like that. And I came up one day, all of a sudden I had these 10 principles that I really felt were important. Not to just live a life of success. I mean, you and I could probably look at ourselves and say, we've had some success in our life, whatever that be, whether it was financial success or business success or family success. But I wanted to go further. I wanted to talk about not just being successful, but being significant, so that, you know, there's a difference. What you and I do for ourselves or with ourselves is success. We had a certain amount of success. What you and I do for other people, that's where significance comes in. That's where we can say we're significant. Now, I think we can be both. I think we can be successful at whatever we do and then be significant. you know, with helping other people. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you can do both. So I'll give you a couple. Each chapter in the book is a principle, and I'm not going to give them all to you, but I'll give you some of the ones that I really think resonated with me. And one of the things is the second principle. And again, these principles are not in any order. You could mix them up. They're not in any order whatsoever. But the more I thought about this one, the more it resonated with me, because I know I've done it. It's that most people think with their fears and their insecurities instead of using their minds. And, you know, I'm sure you've done it. I'm sure I've done it. You know, I'd like to do that, but that scares me. So I'm not going to do that. That's not using my mind. That's using my fear to make a decision. And so I didn't want to do that. And I had done that in my life. And I thought that was important for people to kind of look at and say, you know what, I shouldn't do that. And I always tell people, if you're afraid, if there's something you want to do and that something scares you, then I would suggest you try it. I would suggest you go for it, because at the end of your life, you're not going to be regretful about the things that you did. What you're going to be regretful about are the things that you failed to do. There's an old saying that some of the richest area in any country are our cemeteries, because they're areas rich in businesses never started, books never written, relationships never pursued, goals never realized. You know, I can't imagine standing in the presence of our Creator at the end of my life, whoever or whatever it be, and being unable to account for the gifts and the talents that I was given that I didn't use to make the world a better place. You know, we're not all born with the same gifts and talents, but we all have the ability to become the best person that we're capable of becoming. So that's one. You know, I believe we were all born to live an uncommon and extraordinary life. And that's another principle. And again, that has nothing to do with the job that we have or how much money we make or what kind of car we drive or where we live or anything like that. Again, that goes back to, we're not all born with those same gifts and talents. What your talents are may not be what my talents are. And if I try to be like you, then I'm going to be disappointed. I'm going to be frustrated. You know, and I'm probably not going to live a very happy life. And I know my father, when I wanted to go into law enforcement, my father was very opposed to that. You know, you're going to go to college and you're going to get your degree. And, you know, all my brothers and I have gone to college. All my brothers and I have advanced degrees and things like that. And you're going to make something of yourself. And I was like, well, why can't I make something of myself as a police officer of helping other people? And, you know, I was trying to live the life that my dad wanted me to live. And I wasn't happy. And I know why he did it. He loved me. He wanted me to have a better life. But the life that I wanted was the life that God wanted me to have. You know, but my dad was, no, I don't want you to have that life. And it took me until I was older, probably in my 30s, before I said, you know what, I've got to live my life, Dad. I can't live your life. So living an uncommon and extraordinary life is really more about pursuing what you're supposed to do. So that's another one. I think this is kind of interesting, and I see a lot of young people. A lot of people aren't curious. They're not, you know, well, why did this happen? Why can't we do this? Why, you know, they just take things as face value and move on. I like people that are curious. You know, well, why did that happen? And how did that happen? And what can I do? And things like that. Even when I was a police officer, I was curious about the people that I arrested, that I had to take to jail. I wanted to know about them. You know, what were your goals? What were your dreams? And a lot of them, to be honest with you, were young men who didn't have any goals, who didn't have any dreams. And I can't imagine going through my life with nothing to aspire to, nothing that burned in my soul, as you said, that could take me to a point where, you know, I'm going to get up in the morning because I want to do this, or I want to at least try to do this. I may not be successful at it, but I want to at least try it. And I always call these people that it's kind of a bad term, but I kind of call them dead. You know, we all know people that they get up every morning, they go through the same routine, the same thing. They're never learning. They're never growing. And then they die. Well, those people are dead. They just haven't fallen over yet. You know, and I don't mean to be kind of comical about it, but it's that kind of a thing. So that's another one. And then especially principle number eight, I put in here because I thought it was real important, especially for young people. And that's to fail often, especially when you're young. And I mean, none of us want to fail. Nobody sets out, you know, to make a mistake or to blow it. But so many people never try things because they're afraid. You know, I might fail. And if I fail, what people think about me? Who cares? You know, I mean, who cares what other people think about you? The only way that sticks is if you own it. You know what? You know, you were a lousy so-and-so. Well, that's your opinion. If I don't believe that, the only way that opinion matters is if I own it. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. And so I'm a lousy person. No, don't own that opinion. I tried something that you never did. And now you're mad at me and say I'm a failure. Why would I own that? I just don't understand that. And then the last principle, and we've talked about this a little bit with your family situation, it is the most important word in any language is love. You know, and that I had there was a basketball coach here in the United States at the University of California at Los Angeles, who was a great coach, won a lot of championships, but he was also a thinker. And, you know, he wanted his players to be good, not just basketball wise, but as people. And I remember here, you know, here's probably one of the greatest tacticians or coaches. And somebody asked him, you know, about what the best thing, the greatest thing, whatever. And this man summarized everything with one word, and that word was love. You know, for me to love you, for me to love my players as a coach, for me to love my family, to love my friends, and maybe more importantly, and even more difficult, is to love people who we don't think of, you know, for whatever reason. To try to love those people to the best we can. I do a terrible job of that. I'm much too critical and judgmental, but I really think that in the end, that's all we have. You know, I mean, there's an old story about Alexander the Great that says when Alexander was dying, he asked his counselors to come around. He said, I got three wishes and I want you to carry these out. He said, number one, I want only my doctors to carry my coffin to the grave. Number two, I want the road to the cemetery to be paved with, you know, gold and silver and precious stones. And number three, I want my hands to be left outside my coffin. And one of his counselors said to him, well, Alexander, these are really strange wishes. Why do you want these wishes? And he said, well, number one, he said, I want my doctors to carry my coffin to the grave because I want people to realize that doctors can only help you to heal yourself, that you have a responsibility for your own health, whether it's your mental health or your physical health or whatever that is. That's on you. Doctors can help aid your body to be healthy, but other than that, that's on you. Number two, he said, I've spent my entire life accumulating wealth and power and influence, and yet at the end here, none of that influence, none of that wealth is coming with me to the next life. So I want people to realize that it's just sheer folly to pursue wealth, fame, riches, power, whatever you want to say it. And then number three, he said, I want people to see my hands hanging out of my coffin to realize that I came into this world empty-handed and I leave it the same way. And I think that's such a powerful story because, you know, you think about it in the end, the only thing that we take to this next life, whatever that next life is love. You know, we were born of love. I mean, my religion teaches, you know, I mean, my God created me out of love, knowing every sin, every dumb, bad, goofy thing I was going to do, and yet still loved me enough to put me on this earth. I mean, I can't imagine that kind of love. I mean, that's just so outside of my brain's ability to think about. But again, in the end, all we have is love, love for each other, love for the person or the entity that created us.
Love is the one word contains the entire universe elixir, which one can find out if he is ready to achieve it. I will say attain it. It's not achieving, is not the word, attaining it. Because when you embraces the love, it's not, as you said, love to yourself, love to your family, love to your neighbors, love to your people, love to all those people. Because without any expectation, as you said, we always have this underlying judging. Our GPS started to come up and says, oh, well, this is that person, this is this color or that color. Because this is all subliminal languages have been used to corrupt our mind. Yeah, corrupt our mind. People are not born criminals. They become criminals because they are surrounded by criminals. I have a phrase which I use in my podcast and all other my speeches. I says, we are born to win, but conditioned to fail. We are born to win because we are already winner when we came to this world. This is the first win you were conceived into your mother's egg. That was your first win. Yeah, we started to getting winning because we came out the time when we were started to grow older and we become 6-7 years old. Then we started to get this conditioning from the teachers, from the siblings, from the everybody started to condition us. By the time we reach, we never used to, when we were young, when we start to laugh out loud so much that there was nothing else. Now we're trying to hide our love because we don't want to laugh, because people will look at us and says, look at this person laughing like a crazy, because they can't laugh themselves, because they always started judging you, saying that, look at that person, he's laughing loud, huh? And they can't laugh because they have been suppressing their so much soul that they can't laugh, because we are conditioned to this one. Your principles are very accurate according to the journey people are going through. A youngster, as you say, because young people are not looking at what actually they want in their life. Certain parents push them into the journey, what they have to, which you took as well, and then you decide after 30 years. My children, my father never actually put any pressure on our five brothers. He says, whatever you want to do, do it. It's your journey. Exactly, I said to my daughter, whatever you want to do, you do it. It's your journey. Because end of the day, you are going through that journey. Because if I will say to you, you want to be an engineer or a doctor, tomorrow you'll become an engineer or a doctor, but you will going to say to me that because of you, I became a doctor. But I wanted to be a musician, but you never let me pursue my career because you wanted me to do what your thought process, because you wanted me to have a security. That gives the security. I don't want this position. I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be a musician. Then you spend so much money. That's what a lot of people are not realizing, that give your children an opportunity to achieve their own way of learning, what they want to achieve. You can guide them. You can show them the path, and their choice whether they walk on that path or not. Because you just have to show them the path. And as we already learned, we can take the horse to the water. We can't force him to drink water. Yeah. So that's correct. And that's where I said to a lot of people, and what you have mentioned in your you what people are going to be reading your book. We will share your book link as well on the podcast. So people can go and download the book or buy the book from Amazon, wherever this is available. So tell my audience where they can connect with you, Terry.
So back in 2019, I started a blog called Motivational Check. So if fun to connect with you. If you want to send me a note, my email address is motivationalcheck@aol.com. But if you go to motivationalcheck.com, you can get on my Facebook page, you know, my Instagram, my Twitter, and my LinkedIn page is all through there. And you can also just send me a note. If you don't want to send me an email, just go to motivationalcheck.com and you can send me a note there. You can all interested in buying it on Amazon.
Excellent. Excellent. That's lovely. So guys, when you finish listening, and if you would like to have more information about Terry Tabadu, please get in touch with him, because he got so much resources to share with him, with you, because he has been going through with his journey. What he's trying to do is trying to achieve greater, better life in your career, in your personal life, and in your professional life, as well as in any life you are going in journey with, whether you are doing service to your local church or any other places, how you can actually pass on the message of being aligned. Love is the magic word. People have interpreted the word very differently. Now, love is the journey. Once you start the journey, you will find the elixir in it, which you will have to taste it. When you reach to that elixir, I will tell you, you will be completely mesmerized that the world around you is so beautiful, and you are missing the opportunity which you have been given every day, every single minute, every moment. So open and look that you are being blessed. You are being blessed with so many beautiful things in life. Thank you very much for joining us today. Have a fantastic, wherever you are, great day, evening, or morning. Bye for now. Thank you.